Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we talk about protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in these uncertain times. Today, we're going to talk about privacy and identity theft, two big issues in today's culture. Obviously, identity theft is really the crime of the century. Well, the crime of the century is probably the Federal Reserve. That was the last century and this century. The government is the crime of the century. On a small-time basis, those are the big-time crimes. But on a small-time basis that affects our life very directly, privacy and identity theft, very important things. So today, we'll talk with author John Celio about his book, Privacy Means Profit, Prevent Identity Theft, and Secure You and Your Bottom Line. So we'll be back with that in just less than 60 seconds.
Now's your opportunity to get the Financial Freedom Report. The Financial Freedom Report provides financial self-defense in uncertain times, and it's your source for innovative, forward-thinking investment property strategies and advice. Get your newsletter subscription today. You get a digital download and even more. The price, only $197. Go to jasonhartman.com to get yours today.
My pleasure to welcome John Celio to the show. He is the author of Privacy Means Profit, and it's about preventing identity theft. So this is a very important topic. This is the crime of the modern era. I think we're all at a lot less risk of being held up with a gun in a dark alley than we are having our identity stolen. So this is a very important topic, and it's a pleasure to welcome John to the show. John, nice to talk with you.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
What is going on in the world of identity theft? We keep hearing about it in the media, John, and it is pretty scary, the stories I hear. I had some credit card fraud on my American Express bill recently, and guess that's not really considered a full identity theft, thank God, but it's the second time that's happened, a bunch of unrecognized charges.
Yeah, you know, it's at some point or another, it happens to all of us, or at least to a family member, and whether it's the light form like you had, which was credit card theft, pretty minor and easy to recover from, or a case like mine where I spent 2 years with criminal charges pending and lost about $300,000, it really can impact your life. And unfortunately, it is, as we see over and over in the papers, it is the fastest growing crime in America.
You made a pretty big, devastating claim there. I'm sure that's what inspired your career on this topic. How in the heck did you lose $300,000 and have criminal charges pending? That is scary.
It was terrifying. It dominated 2 years of my life. It was because the first time that I had it happen, which was somebody had stolen some mortgage papers, copies of mortgage papers after we signed our home loan that I threw out in the trash without shredding, stole it, and a woman used my identity to buy a home in another state. She eventually went bankrupt. Of course, I'm the one that fought that battle because it looked like me with my Social Security number and my credit profile. I ignored that. I didn't do anything about it. I thought, oh, it's not going to happen again. It can't be that bad. And then my business partner used my identity to steal from our clients, set up a credit card account, spent $20,000 a month for almost 2 years on that account, and embezzled from our clients using my electronic logins to our bank, covered it up with some fancy accounting, and I spent 2 years fighting in criminal court to stay out of jail.
Wow, this is not just a hassle factor issue then. This could mean your freedom, is what you're saying, huh?
Yeah, you know, they call it identity theft, and all of us kind of think of it in terms of our numbers. You know, it's our Social Security number, our phone number, our name. What it really is your identity. It took away, it completely stripped me of who I was. I lost my business, I lost my salary, I lost the $300,000, my job, and more vital than all of that is I lost contact with my family. I was not present for my family or the people who who I cared about for almost 2 years of my life, and that's devastating.
It sure is. Well, what is going on in the broader world of identity theft? And then let's talk about some solutions as well. Maybe some stats. I mean, people hear about this stuff all the time. What I've also found interesting is kind of what you just alluded to, John, the different forms of identity theft. People think of it as like your credit cards or your financial information, but it's also medical, criminal. What else is there? I can't think of it offhand, but there are several forms of identity theft.
Yeah, the financial, you know, we all are interested so much in our wallet and our money that it gets a lot of the attention. But as you see in my case, you know, somebody used my persona, my identity to commit crimes. And had we not had some pretty crafty technicians and lawyers, it would have been hard to prove that I hadn't committed those crimes. So criminal identity theft is one. Medical, where somebody takes your, maybe they use your medical benefits to have a surgery of some sort, and they use your insurance and they drain out your benefits in order to pay for it, and then you've got, you know, you have a medical problem and there's nothing left. Extremely difficult to prove. In the worst cases, medical identity theft, you know, they put a, somebody goes in and they change the blood type on your medical profile. You go in and this has been documented before. You go in and it's a different blood type and the person has blood shock or toxic shock from receiving the wrong blood. I mean, it's far greater than just the little credit card cases that we see ourselves.
How big is the problem now?
This last year, there were 11 million confirmed cases of identity theft, and that's a little misleading. It sounds like a lot, but there were actually more than 220 million records breached, meaning that businesses alone lost your and my identity about one for one. Every adult had their identity lost at least once, and you know, when you get one of those breach letters in the mail saying, I'm sorry, Countrywide or Heartland Payment Systems or TJ Maxx or the Veterans Administration has lost your data, that means that it is out there for identity theft to happen. But most of us haven't detected it. Most people don't even know for 18 months to 2 years after it's been stolen that it's actually been fraudulently used. Meaning, yes, 11 million reported it, but how many are out there who haven't even detected it yet?
And how does someone not detect it? Are they slowly siphoning money from one's bank account, or people aren't looking at their credit card statements, or it might be another form of identity theft, non-financial?
Yeah, exactly. On the financial side, it's just us not paying attention. Unfortunately, the average consumer doesn't check their credit card statement very closely. They, you know, there might be an $8 or a $10 purchase or even a $400 or $500 one, and the thieves test it out and they work it up and they see if you're detecting it or not, and then they just make bigger and bigger purchases. In the harder cases, it's actually your credit profile that's being hurt, like mine. In the case where my business partner used a credit card that did show in my credit profile, but how many of us actually check our credit profile to see what's happening? And he was paying the bills. Now, he was stealing from our clients to launder that money and pay the bills, but it still looked like I had good credit. Had I done the simple step of monitoring my credit profile with Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion, I would have caught it immediately.
So how often should you monitor it, though? I mean, I've heard like once a year, but that's probably not enough, right?
There's two ways to think about it. One is, if you want to do this in a totally free manner and not pay anybody else any money, you can monitor it 3 times per year for free, because you get one report from each bureau, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion, every year, meaning you could go on today and get one and take a look at it, make sure that nothing's wrong. You could go back in 3 or 4 months and get your second, and 3 or 4 months after that and get your third, and then start repeating again. Here's the problem. We are generally people of convenience. We don't want to go in and take the time to do that. We might do it the first time, maybe the second time, but doing it the third time is a push. So that's where these identity theft monitoring services come in. Most of them are a waste of your money, but there's a few of them out there that are really worthwhile. And what they do is, anytime there's a change to your credit profile or your debit profile, or there's a criminal report on you, or the government puts information out on the internet about you, or cyber thieves are trafficking your information in Eastern Europe, it emails you and lets you know, hey, something's up, you need to check into this. And that's a much more convenient way to catch it.
So it monitors the different forms of identity theft, than it sounds like.
Precisely.
What else can people do to protect themselves? I mean, monitoring service, check your credit report, look at your statements. But again, I've heard stories about people being arrested when they didn't commit a crime because of an identity theft. I mean, like your situation, similar to it, where someone committed a crime in your name.
Right. So the hard part of this whole crime is it can be overwhelming the amount you have to do. That's why I had to write privacy means profit, because you can't narrow it down to you just do this one thing. What it actually is you put together kind of a quilt work of safety prevention techniques, and pretty soon your risk goes down. It's kind of like, you know, if you take a couple of houses on a block and one of them has regular locks and the lights are off, and the one next to it has deadbolts and an alarm and the lights are on and it's got a dog, well, the thief goes to the easy target. And it's the same with your identity. As you start layering on things, you monitor your identity, you freeze your credit, you shred your documents, you protect your wireless connection. As you take those steps one by one, you become a less attractive target. But unfortunately, it's not as simple as you just have this silver bullet and it solves the whole problem.
It's just a constant battle. It's a constant monitoring issue. What happens when someone locks down their credit file? Maybe you want to address some of the different services out there. LifeLock, of course, has been pretty famous lately. And as we talked before, you're not a big fan of LifeLock, it sounds like. I've never used them myself. But the guy gives out his social security number on the radio commercial and so forth. And I guess what they do and what they were in a lawsuit over is they just put fraud alerts on people's credit reports with the credit bureaus. So,
right. And they can no longer even do that. They have been banned from doing it, because you have to be an individual to do that, not a corporation. And it's not that I don't like LifeLock's product. It's just that there are better products out there, in my opinion.
Before we get off of that, though,
CS Identity. And the reason I use it is because technically it does a better job of monitoring. It provides more service than something like LifeLock does. LifeLock can help out, but to me, you're looking for somebody who is out there on all of the databases and all of the government forms and the rogue websites that are looking for the buying and selling of your data. And that's, to me, what CS Identity does better than anything else on the market.
I just want to ask you, though, about the LifeLock thing for a moment, because they can't do that anymore. I guess they lost that litigation over that. But what is it that people do when they lock down their credit report? I know that's a common thing that an individual can do, and some recommend it. They stop getting the credit card offers in the mail. What does that mean when you lock down your report?
Okay, so a couple of points of distinction. First of all, you can opt out of getting junk mail all on your own by going to optoutprescreen.com. And that's all they do. That's all LifeLock does for you, is they go to optoutprescreen.com and they get rid of all of that financial junk mail. LifeLock is not the ones who freeze your credit. Their name suggests that that's what they do, but it actually does nothing to lock your credit. You can, by yourself, freeze your own credit by contacting the three credit reporting bureaus. Now, that doesn't mean you're shutting down your ability to use your credit card or your bank or even to apply for new ones. What it means is nobody can establish a new account in your name without having a password to get into that account. So it's the equivalent of putting a password on your computer. It's putting a password on your credit profile. Then when you go to take out a loan, to set up a new bank account, to get a new credit card, you have to unfreeze or thaw that security freeze for a day or a week so that you can get into the credit, so that the person who is extending you the credit can get in there. And then it freezes back up. And what that does is it keeps unauthorized people from getting into that credit profile, which is the worst form of financial identity theft.
Now, when someone freezes their credit profile, can the creditors that you still have accounts with report to your credit profile? Can they still put stuff on there and change the...
They sure can. Existing accounts are not affected. So they can still update if you were late paying or early paying, or you're in good standing. That still all flows through. It's only new account establishment that is affected.
And what about people getting access to your credit report? A new creditor can't pull the report without you opening it, right?
Correct. If you don't thaw it or unfreeze it, they absolutely can't get into it. And that's where it stops the crime. In my case, it would have stopped the woman who used my identity to buy a home. It would have stopped her from getting, you know, that credit off of my social security number or my credit profile. And it would have stopped my business partner from setting up a credit card account in my name, because you can't do anything with your credit profile if it's frozen until you allow it to be unfrozen.
Let me take a brief pause. We'll be back in just a minute.
What's great about the shows you'll find on jasonhartman.com is that if you want to learn about some cool new investor software, there's a show for that. If you want to learn why Rome fell, Hitler rose, and Enron failed, there's a show for that. If you want to know about property evaluation technology on the iPhone, there's a show for that. And if you'd like to know how to make millions with mobile homes, there's even a show for that. Yep, there's a show for just about anything. Only from jasonhartman.com. Or type in Jason Hartman in the iTunes store.
One of the things I really like, one of the metaphors you use in the book, which is the mindset of a spy. You tell people protect their net worth and their bottom line by using the seven mindsets of a spy. And we've all seen in most of us, like James Bond movies, all these other sort of intrigue spy movies. What does a spy do that a regular everyday individual should do?
Well, the primary thing is simply thinking about information, whether it's lying around on your desk or, you know, in unlocked filing cabinets or while you're surfing, you know, in an unprotected environment like at Starbucks or in the airport. If you simply think, okay, what would my worst enemy, what would a spy, somebody who's trying to get my information, how would they get that out of me? And when you think through that in that method, and there are as you mentioned in Privacy Means Profit, there are seven specific mindsets. So one of them, for example, is eliminate the source. A spy is trained on how to eliminate the information before it becomes a problem. And a good example is the one we just talked about. Opting out of that financial junk mail means that it never comes to your mail in the first place. It never exists. So you don't need to shred it. You don't need to worry about locking your mailbox. You don't need to worry about all of the other ways it's stolen because it doesn't exist in the first place. That's kind of how thinking like a spy works.
That's good. So eliminate, destroy, secure, lock, evaluate, interrogate, and monitor. Those are the seven steps, right?
That's correct.
John, you've written two books on this subject. The newest one that's coming out soon is Privacy Means Profit. What's the title of your prior book?
The first book is Stolen Lives, Identity Theft Prevention Made Simple. And it takes a look at, both books look at the individual side of identity theft. Privacy Means Profit then takes it to the business level and shows people how to apply these same tools for protecting ourselves and our families to protecting the data inside of their businesses.
Oh, so you mean if someone has a small business, protect the data in general from competitors or for the benefit of customers or both? Or what do you mean there?
Yeah, exactly. It's you know, of course your competitors are, if they're smart, they're going through your dumpster, which is public property. The minute it goes out of your building as in the dumpster, they're going through to see, you know, who your best customers are, what your profit margins are, what your upcoming marketing strategy is. So yes, corporate espionage is big. Also the liability. If you're in most industries, if you take credit, meaning people don't pay you necessarily in cash, then you are liable for their information. If you lose that information, even so much as a customer record with a credit card number on it, you pay to recover that. You pay legal costs, you pay damages to the customer, and right now the average for a business is just over $210 per record lost. So you can imagine even a small business, you know, losing 1,000 customer records, that gets very costly very quickly. The average cost of a small business data breach is $6.7 million in recovery.
So do businesses have insurance for this kind of thing if it happens?
They certainly can have insurance. The average business, no, doesn't even have it on their radar screen at this point.
Wow, yeah, that's really scary. That's something probably a lot of people aren't thinking about. You do a lot of speaking, and your speaking engagements are to the large corporate world, whether it be the Federal Trade Commission, the FDIC, sort of pseudo-governmental agency there, but a lot of other private companies. What is it you're telling these large entities?
It's large entities. It's organizations of small entities that, you know, are part of associations. And as you said, a lot of government work, Department of Defense. And what I'm mostly there to do is to motivate the people in the audience, whether it's their employees, their workers, their association members, to care about the topic, to go out and see how badly it can damage your bottom line, how much it can cost your family, your net worth. You know, in my case, I essentially lost everything before I started paying attention. So I'm up there as the example of what not to do. And then I give the skills of how to detect fraud, how to see if you're being conned or socially engineered, and how to stop it before it starts. Because obviously prevention, just like if having a heart attack, it's easier to exercise than it is to have the heart attack and recover. Well, it's the same with data theft. It's easier to take a couple of simple steps than it is to spend years recovering like I have.
I love that term you just used, to see if you're being socially engineered. What does that mean?
social engineering is where people manipulate you for your information by pushing your buttons. So a form of social engineering that's common is the phishing email. So that's social engineering applied to technology, or the Nigerian scam, where somebody says, listen, I'm going to give you something. I'm going to give you a large sum of money if you will simply prepay the shipping costs for this package, or some other scam. And how that's engineering us is we all want something for nothing. We want the free deal. We want to be wealthy. And the con artists or social engineers know these things about us. There are human behavioral patterns, and they push those buttons in such a way that they get us to click on the link and update our account information when we know good and well it's probably not our bank. Or we give information out about our business, you know, that allows somebody access into the computer systems or into the building without a second thought. And it's because they're playing on our biases, our emotional biases of fear or authority or obligation, or they're rushing us. Those are the type of skills that I go in and I train on constantly.
I got to say, John, it's really hard for me to believe that anybody is really falling for phishing scams anymore or Nigerian. Come on.
6% of phishing scams are currently successful. That means that if you send out 1,000 spam mails, that 60 of them, 60 people, give their information right now. So it's very easy to send out to buy a list of 1,000 emails. You might spend $20 or $30. And yet you're getting identities on the other end that could be worth up to $300,000.
Wow.
If it's handled by a good thief. So, yes, it's just a statistical game, but the statistics are still phenomenally high.
That's mind-boggling that really happens. People actually fall for that stuff. But it does. It's unfortunate. Tell us, first of all, what was the final thing? What happened to your business partner for embezzling? And then I want to ask you about the future of this, where this is going.
The end of my business partner story is usually one I don't tell until the end of my speech. So you you have to hire me for a speech.
Oh, darn. Okay.
And what was the second question?
Well, I really wanted to ask you, John, what about the future of this? I mean, you just talked about phishing, for example. And phishing is where you get this phony email and it says, this is from Bank of America. Please update your account information. They take you to a fake website. You give them all your info, which they already have. And then the person uses that. I've heard some talk about certified emails or making the internet infrastructure more secure. It was really never designed for consumer use like it's turned into, and so it's not really equipped for a lot of this stuff. But the fact that you can just get emails from anybody in the world, and I suppose you can get phone calls from anybody too, but what is the future? What is going to be the conclusion? Is this problem of identity theft just going to be something that plagues us for the rest of our lives, or is there some solution coming down the pike that maybe we can't see yet? You're in the world, so you know about what's being talked about out there.
Yeah, it's a little disheartening as to there being a final solution, whether it's legislation or a piece of technology. Unfortunately, every time we plug a hole, another opens. A good example is the email phishing attacks have gone way down, and what they've been replaced with is social networking phishing attacks, where somebody friends you on your Facebook page or your LinkedIn or Twitter or however they do it. They learn a lot about you because we all post too much information on those sites, and then it's pretty easy to gain your trust because they know who your friends are, they know when you're traveling, when you're going to be away from your house, what your job is, how you think, what you read, what you watch, and when you know all of that, it's pretty easy to get further information out of you. I think that the final answer to it is once you get a ground level fundamental training on how to detect all of this stuff, it's like you said, I can't believe anybody would still fall for phishing. Well, that's because you're educated to a level where you detect it immediately. If we were able to train more people, more companies, on simply detecting how these scams work and what the signs are, the red flags, and get people to take a couple of fundamental steps, the steps like I go through in Privacy Means Profit, it would strangle the industry enough of identity theft and the crime rings that it would no longer be as profitable, and it would make it much, much less attractive.
That's an important part of it, obviously. And what you said about when you plug one hole, there's always another hole that comes up. It seems as though crooks, thieves, and these scumbags are really pretty innovative people. I hate to give them any sort of credit at all, but it really seems like that's the case. They always figure out ways to beat the system, don't they?
They do, and there's a huge monetary incentive to do it. And as long as there is that, just, you know, as with other types of crime, they will continue to continue to go after it. And since there's no real legislation that makes, you know, identity theft illegal on a federal basis, you know, you fight it state by state, and because it's very virtual and very hard to catch the criminals, until that changes, it's going to be the crime of choice.
Unfortunate and scary, but it's good that you were here with us today to tell us about it. What would you like people to know to just kind of wrap this up? Any other tips they can do to protect themselves and tell them where they can get the book to?
You bet. Probably the best, again, since it's such a broad topic, it's very important that you prioritize what you do. And I go through a lot of those details on my website, which is where you can also get the book, which is thinklikeaspy.com, all one word, thinklikeaspy.com. It also has a link to my blog, which every time there's a new issue that you need to know about, I publish an article on it and tell you how to solve it. And there's a handful of other resources there, as well as materials on if you want to bring me in to speak.
Good stuff. Well, John, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate learning about this. It's scary, as I mentioned, but this is not something you can stick your head in the sand about. Everybody's got to really be paying attention to this type of thing, don't they?
Absolutely, and thank you for leading the charge.
Have you listened to the Creating Wealth series? I mean, from the beginning. If not, you can go ahead and get book one, that shows 1 through 20, in digital download. These are advanced strategies for wealth creation. For more information, go to jasonhartman.com. Thank you for joining us today for the Holistic Survival Show, protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Be sure to listen to our Creating Wealth Show, which focuses on exploiting the financial and wealth creation opportunities in today's economy. Learn more at www.jasonhartman.com or search Jason Hartman on iTunes. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, offering very general guidelines and information. Opinions of guests are their own, and none of the content should be considered individual advice. If you require personalized advice, please consult an appropriate professional. Information deemed reliable, but not guaranteed.